Okay, thank you. Okay, so for those of us who use chambers to measure greenhouse gases, including CO2 or nitrous oxide, we know that there are several methods available for using that data to calculate the flux. And the objective of this work was to look to evaluate the accuracy and precision of the various methods that are out there. And as part of that, we tried to develop some hopefully useful spreadsheet-based tools to evaluate accuracy and precision for folks who are trying to decide on how to design their chambers and how to interpret their data. And then finally, if I have time and I don't get the hook, I can talk about a recent method that we've developed as an alternative, yet another alternative, but hopefully an improved method for calculating fluxes. And so the motivation for this is that there is really no consensus out there regarding the best way to calculate fluxes using chambers or to deal with the so-called chamber effect that's shown generically there. Even though it's well recognized that linear regression will underestimate the flux to a large extent in some cases, if you look in the literature today, you'll see that at least half of the studies being published are using linear regression. In fact, a survey done looking at studies during 2005-2007 showed that only 25% used a nonlinear calculation method. And so I'm going to start off with an example data set to make a couple of points. This is, I think, not anything special about these data. Recently collected data from this past summer, we used a chamber with a volume to area ratio of 13.4 centimeters. If you use linear regression, you get a fairly high R squared value, 0.996, and you calculate a flux of 71.9 micrograms nitrogen per meter squared per hour. The second most commonly used technique is probably the Hutchinson and Mosier model, which uses only three of those five data points. In this case, you're calculating a flux that's 25% higher than linear regression. Or you can use a quadratic regression approach. In this case, you have 0.999 R squared, and the flux is 20% higher than linear regression. And another alternative is the most recently developed method by Livingston et al. And in this case, again, you have this high R squared, and the flux you get is 35% higher than linear regression. So the first point is that the goodness of fit is not necessarily a good indicator of accuracy, since we have good fit in many cases. And secondly, that the method that you choose can make a large difference in the greenhouse gas estimate. If you convert the difference between the high and the low value to CO2 equivalents, that works out to 3 kilograms of CO2 per hectare per day, which is pretty substantial if you extrapolate that over time. Now, evaluating the accuracy of this method is not an easy thing to do. The chamber effect is instantaneous, and it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to actually know what that flux is, to measure it instantaneously. Some folks have tried to use laboratory studies to generate a known flux in the laboratory and then have an absolute reference, but those experiments have also had problems. They've basically shown that linear regression underestimates the flux. A few years ago, Hutchinson and colleagues started using numerical modeling approach to evaluate accuracy, and this is the work that we've picked up on. And so this involves basically using a physically based numerical model to simulate gas production in the profile and transport into a chamber. And from that, you can generate simulated chamber data. And then you can use these various calculation methods to calculate the flux, then compare those calculated values back to the actual quote-unquote flux that was assumed by the numerical model. And so I'm not going to get into the details of the modeling approach that we used. That's the governing equation. Our assumptions are a bit less restrictive than have been used in the past. We don't assume that the soil is physically uniform. We allow for uptake in the soil. The main assumption of these models is that gas transport is dominated by one-dimensional vertical diffusion, so that pressure effects and lateral diffusion effects are negligible, which some studies have shown If the chamber is designed properly, those assumptions should be valid. However, we have to keep in mind what our assumptions are. And so we developed this method for looking at a particular set of chamber conditions. In this case, we're plotting the chamber height, which is really the volume to area ratio, versus the percent underestimation in the flux at different total chamber deployment times. And this is for linear regression. You can see the flux, the percent underestimations ranging from 10% to 50%. We also showed that even the nonlinear models that are out there will underestimate the flux. And Livingston et al. also showed this. So this is for the model of Hutchinson and Mosier. It's underestimating it to a less of an extent than the linear regression, but still it's ranging from 5 to 35%. We found that the Hutchinson and Mosier model in quadratic regression actually had very similar accuracy under all the conditions that we looked at, as well as another exponential model that I won't talk about. Another important finding that many people aren't aware of is that the chamber effect is influenced by the soil physical properties. And so the greater the porosity, actually the greater the airfield porosity of the soil, the more nonlinearity you'll see in the data, and therefore the greater potential for underestimating. So here's comparing three different soils of varying bulk density and water content, and you can see that the percent underestimation is varying. So this can lead to to biases in evaluating treatment effects if you're not considering that. We also showed that the NDFE model, which is a theoretically based model, can also underestimate the flux, particularly if the soils are not physically uniform, which is assumed by their model. But overall, this was generally the most accurate of the methods. However, it's problematic in terms of its application. It uses nonlinear regression solver. It solves for three parameters simultaneously. And what you'll find is if you run that solver many times, you get different results for the same data set. And it's not clear sometimes which is the correct one. So for this reason, we ranked it low on the precision category. Going back to that original example, if you run that solver 100 times, what I didn't mention is that only 33% of the time do you get this result. 67% you get a result that's only slightly higher than linear regression and lower than the other models. We also did some additional precision analysis using Monte Carlo techniques. In this case, we're taking that output from the numerical model, combining it with the random errors present in our analytical system. So that curve shows the standard deviation in the measurement for our GC system as a function of the N2O concentration. So for each Monte Carlo trial, it's applying those random errors to each data point in the time series. So you have a time series that accounts for the GC error. Then you can calculate the flux for that particular Monte Carlo trial, repeat that 1,000 times, and you end up with a distribution of calculated fluxes. And so from this, we quantified that there's a fundamental dilemma. We said earlier, if you increase your chamber height or reduce your deployment time, it increases your accuracy. But here we're showing it, we're quantifying that it also reduces your precision, as expressed here by coefficient of variation. And that's going to depend on the precision of your analytical system. Another interesting result was that the different calculation techniques differed in precision. And so the least accurate technique, linear regression, is also the most precise. And we also found a difference between the two nonlinear models here. Go back. So a consequence of this is that linear regression is actually more sensitive to detecting differences than the other models are. And so we can also quantify this in terms of the number of replicates required to detect a significant difference for any given difference that's assumed by the numerical model. In this case, 3 required for linear regression compared to 5 and 7 for the other two. And again, it's going to depend on the particular measurement system that you're using. So we have an overall dilemma here in that the model that's potentially the most accurate is also has this serious problem with precision. The one that's the most precise is the least accurate. So one thing we've thought about recommending is if you want to do treatment comparisons that you use linear regression for that, but you also do some type of error analysis or maybe also do use a nonlinear method to get at the absolute values, the magnitude. In terms of balance, the quadratic probably is the best balance between accuracy and precision. Now, we've recently developed a model that is based on the same theory as the NDFE, but gets around some of the problems in the way it's implemented. And we think it has similar accuracy. It returns only a single value. It takes the results of the linear regression or quadratic regression and, makes corrections based on gas transport theory. The main drawback is that actually it requires measurements of the soil physical properties to account for that effect. But in many of these studies, we're already measuring water content and in some cases bulk density, so this may not be a big a drawback. And so I just want to conclude by saying chamber methods vary widely, and so the amount of errors are going to vary widely from experiment to experiment and even within experiments. We looked at 6 different studies published over the last 2 years and found that the percent underestimation ranged from less than 10 to more than 30%. So efforts to try to develop accurate N2O inventories are hindered by this wide diversity of methods, unless we come to some kind of consensus, or unless we try to go back and make corrections for these different errors. And this also has implications for models because models are calibrated against actual data. So if there's biases in the data, they're going to be showing up in the model. So that's all I had. Thanks.
Any questions?
I think they're comparable. So those, it ranged widely, so it depends. You know, all of those simulations assume that the flux is not changing at all. And so it's surprising that you would get a CV of 50%. But, you know, spatial variability can range higher than that. So I think you're,
you know. 60 to 90 is what we get.
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Perhaps not related to your topic, but do you have any experience?